I'm John Moe. Coming up on this week's edition of Wits, comedian and actor Kumail Nanjiani tells me about his first trip to America.
So it was 6 a.m. and my uncle was like, hey, I have something to show you. And we went and we saw the Macy's Thanksgiving Day Parade. And I was like, this is every day in America!
Kumail is a versatile actor. He stars in HBO's Silicon Valley. He's been on Portlandia. And in our show, he plays a guy who gets very upset about a conference room potato.
A potato is an ingredient. This is not a kitchen or a store. It's a conference room. Potato? How is anything what?
Plus, singer-songwriter Valerie June. Coming right up. From APM, American Public Media, and Minnesota Public Radio, this is Wits. I'm John Moe. Coming to you from the Fitzgerald Theater in St. Paul, we've got a great show for you. Singer-songwriter Valerie June is here. Our house band, John Munson and the Witnesses. You know him from his stand-up work, including the recent special Beta Male. You know him as an actor from shows like Silicon Valley, The Colbert Report, and Portlandia. Kumail Nanjiani, welcome to Wits.
Oh, thank you so much for having me.
You went to college at Grinnell College in Iowa.
I don't know if they've heard of it.
I don't think they even went there. They're just fans of the sports teams.
We shoot a lot of threes. That was our thing.
Was that your thing?
It really was. We played no defense in basketball, and we shot a lot of threes. Scores would be like 202 to 139, and commentators would say, this is not basketball.
All Steve Kerrs. But you grew up...
Yeah, that's true.
You grew up in Karachi, Pakistan, and then you went to Grinnell College. Why?
I was kind of hoping you'd pause for the cheer after Karachi. Right. No, it feels Karachi. Sarcastic.
Oh,
keep it.
Don't suck up to Karachi now, folks.
Yeah, too late. Holster your sarcasm. You know, I didn't know what Grinnell was... Because, you know, the way America is presented to where I'm from, the rest of the world, you just see movies are like in L.A. or New York, so you think that's all of America. And then I landed in Iowa, and I was like, this is not as advertised. I saw no movies with this. Where are the buildings and the bikinis?
They don't put Grinnell in the pamphlet that they send to Pakistan.
No, they don't. Actually, I first visited America when I was like 14. I went to New York, and that's the only place I visited. And we landed on a Wednesday night, and I couldn't sleep all night. And I didn't know what Thanksgiving was. It just happened to be Thanksgiving that day. It was Thursday. So it was 6 a.m., and my uncle was like, hey, I have something to show you. And we went, and we saw the Macy's Thanksgiving Day Parade. And I was like, this is every day in America! We wake up and giant Garfields float down the street. No day has lived up to that.
It's been nothing but disappointment ever since. And so then, once you got to Iowa after college was done, you followed the standard guy from Pakistan, goes to a liberal arts college in Iowa, path to stand-up comedy.
Yeah, story oft told.
Right. How did that come about? How did the comedy career come about?
I wasn't good at anything else. I tried a lot of things. Okay. I tried computer science. Don't, please. But I was bad at it. That's where the stereotype breaks down.
Was it when you got to college? Did everybody else say, "Well, the computer science area is over there"?
Well, in college, you know, it was Grinnell. So Grinnell, people know it's like very super liberal, like a lot of white guilt. Like people didn't want to even mention race. So people would be like, "Oh, you know Tom? Which one is he? Oh, he's the, you know, he plays tennis, wears red shoes, Tom. And I'm like, is he black? They're like, yeah, 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 he's black. I'm like, why? Why did you say that? We're in Iowa. Really narrows it down. So people in Grinnell weren't like that, but when I left, when I graduated, I got a job very easily, and I'm convinced it was racism that got me the job because I was never any good at it.
What was the job?
It was in tech support.
Profiling what? Got you a job.
Yeah. Yeah. See, it goes both ways. There is a good side to profiling.
Well, as long as we're talking about tech, let's talk about your show, Silicon Valley, on HBO. This is a show about guys working in a high-tech startup company in Silicon Valley. Tell us about these guys, this type of guy, and tell us about Dinesh, the character you play.
The character I play, his name's Dinesh, and he's an immigrant from Pakistan. I don't know where they got that idea from. But he's a guy who's like, he's not super nice. He's hyper-driven, very motivated. Doesn't really care about, you know, how he treats other people, just wants to, you know, sort of succeed. And I think why I think he's funny is that he's horribly obsessed, I think, with wanting to be cool, which is like, if you're cool, you don't want to be cool. So that's like the inherent, I think, struggle for him is that he wants...
It's a paradox.
It's a paradox. Wanting to be cool is not cool, so he's not cool, but he really wants to be cool. He's also decided that rugby shirts are what's cool.
What's cool. Do you relate to this? Have you wanted to be cool?
No, I'm effortlessly cool.
Okay. Never needs to try. Have you met people from Silicon Valley who come up and talk to you about the show? Or, I mean, are you getting it right according to these people?
I think so. You know, we had a screening in Silicon Valley in Redwood City, I believe it's called, outside of San Francisco. And so it was all these people, like Elon Musk was there. And Elon Musk is the guy who created Tesla. And, you know, he's doing the SpaceX and stuff. He's kind of a genius. But after we showed the episode, he gave this interview where he was like, I go to way better parties than the guys in the show go to. We were like, yeah, you're a billionaire. What point are you trying to prove? But what was interesting was all these guys were there. I met the guy who created Craigslist, and he came up to me and he was like, hey, I'm Craig. And I was like, okay, last name Zlist. But it's interesting. These guys are like superstars in this little bubble, you know. But this little bubble is like, you know, it affects our lives, but we never really know what's going on in there. So the way Silicon Valley is set up is so interesting and weird. There's these like VCs who kind of are these celebrities in there, and everyone's trying to suck up to them. And it's people that we haven't really heard of. So it's a really interesting political setup, and it's ripe for sort of, you know, exploration and for satire.
Yeah. You host a podcast also, The Indoor Kids, with your wife, Emily Gordon. Some fans of the podcast here. Do you remember one of the first video games that you got hooked on? You're an expert on a lot of these now, but do you remember one of the first that grabbed you?
One of the first ones I played that I really loved was Paperboy, which is you're delivering paper. So instead of going out and making money delivering paper, you're at home digitally delivering paper.
And paying for the privilege.
Yeah, and paying for the privilege. And I thought it was great because in the beginning, you know, the things that are after you, you're sort of trying to avoid like grates, sewer grates, and like bees. And then by like level 5, like death is after you. And I was like, wow, they really upped the stakes on this. But I love that in a video game, you could kind of do anything, you know? Like, I remember there's this game called Revenge of Shinobi, which is one of my favorite games, and there's a part where you fight a robot who shoots homing missiles at you, and defeating it was only slightly easier than fighting an actual robot that shoots homing missiles at you would be. And those games were so hard. Like, they put hair on my chest, you know? It's like a 7-year-old with a full...
That's how I feel about games. I have a 13-year-old son who does like tries to show me how to play one of his games. We're trying to share in this experience, and after a while, he just gives me a look, and I'm like, "Yeah, here, take the controller back." How do the like there's so many buttons. It isn't like on, you know, the games I grew up on with the joystick and the one button.
Yeah, no, I mean, that's how I started. You have one button and you have one stick and then you slowly move on. And now there's two sticks, four buttons on the right thumb, and then each of the fingers, there's two shoulder buttons.
Is it like typing? You just have to learn how to do all the things with your fingers by doing it more and more? It's like you start hunt and peck and then you build up? Can Mavis Beacon teach me how to do this?
If you have to ask this question, you have no way.
I've already lost every game.
Yeah, you're never going to be a gamer, I'm sorry. My dad and I used to play when we were kids. There was this game called Street Surfer that was on the Commodore 64, and it's a guy who's... someone mood? Okay. You're like on a street and there's a you're on a skateboard and you're hitching rides on cars, and as people throw out bottles, you pick them up and recycle them. But my dad was better at the game than I was, and I really hated that. And I was like, the game is banned from the house now. Like, we could each, our whole lives, we had one game we could veto. So I vetoed that, and then I woke up one day and my dad made a huge poster, put it up in my room, and it said, Street Surfer, the king of games, the game of kings. And I got so angry, I ripped up the poster crying. So that's what you're missing out on.
Yeah, so really your podcast, this whole thing, you're just trying to get back at your dad.
Isn't that all of us are doing all the time?
Kumail Nanjiani, everybody. Our musical guest this week is a singer-songwriter who takes more styles of music than you would think possible and combines them to create something you've never heard before. Her most recent album is the critically acclaimed Pushin' Against a Stone. Here's Valerie June.
When I get to Tennessee Dan.
More with Valerie June and comedian Kumail Nanjiani coming up. Say, do you have a favorite Wits moment? We want to know. We're putting together an audience choice show, and we need you to tell us what your favorite segments from past shows have been. David Cross performing epic slam poetry, Kristen Schaal doing pop song correspondences as the horse with no name. Maybe it's Jason Isbell, Amanda Shires, and Mark Maron singing The Wait, or the Tom Waits meditation cassette series, or any Amazon Review Theater with Paul F. Tompkins. Go to witsradio.org, tell us what you thought was great, and tell us why you want to hear it again, and then we'll go make a radio show out of it. This is Wits. I'm John Moe. This is Wits. I'm John Moe, here with comedian Kumail Nanjiani and singer-songwriter Valerie June. Valerie June, welcome to Wits.
Thank you. Hey, thanks for having me.
What did music mean to you growing up? You sang a lot in church, right?
I did. We went to a church similar to what we see here. Everyone's sitting out all together, and one guy would get up there with a big, thick songbook in his hand, and he would say, "All right, turn to page 156 or 591. There were thousands of songs in this book. It just was endless, the Southern spirituals that were in there. And so everybody all at once had to start singing. And so there were some people who sounded great, and I would just be like, yay, I love it. There would be some people who sounded really rusty. There would be some people who were, like, hanging on to the pew because they were, like, hungover from the night before and just leaning and humming and just getting it. And then there would be, you know, just kids and old folks and young folks and all kinds of people singing and bellowing at the top of their lungs.
So you were singing a lot in church, and then your father, I understand, was a music promoter?
Yeah.
What kind of music was he working with?
Oh, he worked a lot with gospel, and he also worked with one of the shows he promoted when he first got started was one of Prince's earlier shows. Yeah, before he was really, really huge and famous. And then he promoted, Bobby Womack, and I got to meet these people and, you know, help, you know, hang flowers for the shows and run around with my brothers and sisters and fulfill the writers and things of that sort. So that's what I did growing up, one of the many jobs I had.
You have such a unique voice. I love your voice so much. Did anyone ever try to get you to sing like everyone else? To say, like, no, this is the way people are supposed to sing?
Yeah, people kind of gave me the you'll never make it as a singer vibe when I was growing up, and I'd be like, well, I guess I'll stop telling people that I want to be a singer.
And just keep
my
singing
voice
anyway.
Is so weird.
Yeah.
And I'll just go home and sing at the top of my lungs because I love to. And so it never offends me if someone doesn't like my voice. I just think that it is what it is, and I love it, and I think it's an instrument, and it makes me feel good to sing. And if nobody else likes it, then that's fine.
I think a lot of people like it. And then when did you start writing your own songs?
Oh, I started when I was a very little girl. I didn't even realize what I was doing. I was like writing about frogs and snails and rainbows and all kinds of children's type things. And as I got older, I was like, well, what is this exactly that I'm doing? Okay, well, I reckon I'm a songwriter. And the way that I knew that I was a songwriter and not just a straight up poet or short story writer, which I enjoy those things as well, was that when songs come to me, they come as voices. And so I hear a voice singing to me what I sing to you. I just translate it. It moves through my body. I hear it, and I just sing it exactly like, I try to sing it exactly like the voice sang it to me.
Is it your voice singing?
No, it's not my voice, and that's the weird thing. Don't call me crazy. It's all kinds of voices. Sometimes it'll be a young voice, sometimes an older voice. Sometimes I could identify it as like, oh, well, that's got to be an old black man's voice because of the roughness or deepness of it or whatever. So sometimes I can tell what kind of voice, what kind of body, I can imagine what kind of body is coming out of, but not always am I able to do that. And not every time I sit down to write a song does it come that way. That's why I like to co-write with other writers, because I want to learn how to just say, we're going to write a song about yellow bananas and pink elephants today. And I want to sit down and be able to do that. So,
well,
yeah.
When you hear that voice, I mean, can you tell me about a time where you heard that voice? I mean, is it always when you sit down to write a song, or is it like at the grocery store?
Well, it's usually when I'm doing other things. And some artist that I crossed paths with a while ago told me that there's a name for such an act where, you know, as you're going through your mundane task of your life, that whatever it is that you do as an artist comes to you and it just magically appears, I suppose you could say. And so it happens while I'm grocery shopping, or Tennessee Times started coming while I was boarding a plane. And then when I went down to Tennessee and I was working with Dan Auerbach, he said, well, what you got in that notebook? Because I have a notebook full of all of these, what I call skeletons of songs. And they're songs that came incomplete. They're songs that I can't finish. So they're skeletons, and they need to have all the meat and the organs and everything to them. So I was sitting down with Dan, and he said, what do you have? And I started singing him, running on Tennessee time. And he was like, I really like that. We could work with that, because
Dan
he
Auerbach
just moved.
Dan Auerbach of the Black Keys.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
He just moved to Tennessee from Akron.
Okay.
So, and I just left Tennessee to go to New York. So we had this Tennessee transition happening, and he felt it, and he had the other half to the song. So I was able to finish that one.
What is Tennessee time?
Oh, it's a very slow moving time. We kind of do things in our own way, and we get it done now. It's TCB, Elvis, don't forget.
In a flash.
Yeah, in a flash. TCB ain't playing. But, you know, I mean, we do it when we want to do it. We move at a slower pace than everybody else, and that's just fine.
New York's going to be very interesting.
There's definitely a contrast happening there.
Yeah, do you live in New York now. Do you feel kind of a separation there?
When I'm in New York, I am such a hermit. I don't do hardly anything but get some groceries and hang out at the house cooking. So I'm still on Tennessee time. Get my cast iron skillets out.
It's like a consulate. You've got a little Tennessee extension in New York.
There's nothing to do in New York anyway.
Oh, no. I have to start living.
Valerie June, everybody.
Baby blue, and it's all up 'cause I got it. But I'm
That's Valerie June with John Munson and The Witnesses. Guess who they got in two?
Hey, did they paint in here?
Like 3 months ago. Guess who's in the interrogation room two?
They painted 3 months ago?
Oh, don't worry. You're still a good detective. Now,
I wasn't worried about that.
Good. Now...
But now I am.
Okay, well, see if you can detective up the name of the person in interrogation room two.
Okay, well, give me a clue.
Like a
hint.
It's Jerry.
You're bad at hints. Oh, man, your face just crumpled. Did I make you sad?
Being bad at hints is something I'm sensitive about. And I'm on edge because of all the dead bodies lately.
Ah, 10 at least or so. 10 or so at least. To be honest, if I'm being honest, I feel bad we haven't solved any of the cases.
Well, Jerry, room 2, found another one today.
Finds a lot of bodies.
All of them, actually. This makes 11.
11?
This month, and it's only the 10th of the month, and I think that's why they brought him in.
They don't think... Jerry?
I know, he's such a helper with the body findings. Maybe we just don't want to believe it. Let's go talk to him.
Hey, guys.
Jerry!
Oh, you look different, Dennis.
I got a haircut.
I was going to say, looks great.
Thanks, Jerry.
Simon, how was your anniversary?
I took her to the place you said.
You ordered the...
She loved it. They should put it on the menu.
That's what I said.
You were right, Jerry.
Best in town. Dennis, you got to try it.
I got the glutens. Anyway, Jerry, why you're here?
Yeah, why am I here?
Well, you remember when you found that body, the first one?
Oh, I'll never forget it. Wife and I, arguing, typical. We had opera tickets. She took forever to get ready. Tuxedo's more complicated than a dress, but I'm ready. She's not. We're arguing on our doorstep, and then boom, we see a body.
10 days ago.
Changed my life. My wife and I glimpsed mortality that night. Touched the veil. Now we know what's important. We don't argue anymore, and we don't go to the opera.
No?
No, neither of us liked it.
Oh, no one really does.
You were just doing it for each other?
Yeah.
Oh.
Now, let's see, the next body was...
I was walking the dog, thinking about the first body, because that stays with you. Dog sniffing around some trash, and, I mean, he found it, but, like, I called it in, you know?
And the third body...
At the carnival, went on the tilt-a-whirl, bam, body.
I thought the tilt-a-whirl was fourth.
Right, okay. Third was in the dairy aisle at the supermarket.
Fifth was...
Helicopter museum.
Sixth was in your office at your firm.
Seven was in your driveway.
Yeah, eight and nine.
Oh, those old man twins, remember?
In your car.
Right. And 10 was in your bedroom.
That was rough.
Jerry, the point is, you could see how that's suspicious.
And as cop squadron cops, we need to sometimes look at evidence. Overwhelming evidence.
At first, a coincidence, maybe.
Yeah, at second through fifth, say...
More coincidence, because it's Jerry, and we love Jerry.
Love Jerry.
I want to be like you, Jerry.
Yeah, but 7 through 11...
Might be too many coincidences.
You don't think... Oh, my gosh. You think I... You guys, no. I'm not a murderer.
You sure?
Yes.
Oh, thank goodness. Okay.
Because you are great.
We were just at the cop meeting this morning talking about how
we love Jerry.
That's what we said.
And
we love Jerry.
Everybody agreed that we all love Jerry.
So when it looked like maybe it wasn't a coincidence.
You guys, I would never murder anybody.
Good.
Not my wife, though.
Yeah?
Okay, between you and me.
Your wife?
Okay, it saved our marriage, that first one. And I think she's been doing the rest.
Well, how do you know that she...
Well, okay, I saw her do one. And then I faked surprise when I found the body. I was like, oh, where's this body from? Oh.
Wow. I was totally convinced. You are a good actor.
Yeah, really good. I mean, I saw a little note of not quite surprised, but chalked it up to you having found the other bodies.
Okay. You guys won't say anything, right? I mean, it's not helping the marriage, the murders. But that she's doing them for me, that helps.
Oh, Jerry, that puts us in a tough spot. If we follow the rules to the letter, like we're supposed to, we should arrest her and charge her with...
Don't say it.
Gotta say it. Murder. Yep.
Hi, hello. I'm Jerry's wife. They said I could pick him up here, that usually I wouldn't be allowed back, but you guys all love Jerry. Hi, Jerry.
Oh, hi, honey. So nice to see you.
You're Jerry's wife?
Yes.
Lady, you're under...
No, 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 come on. No, I know. It's Jerry's wife.
But that doesn't mean...
Maybe this one time it means...
So what, we just let her...
Yes. Love. Love. Love is more important than the rest with the bodies. And we can't help them now, but love.
Love. Here's Jerry, ma'am. Take it easy, you crazy kids.
Thanks, guys. See you tomorrow.
Oh, this afternoon, I bet.
Cops, squadron, squad of cops, doing their job down at the shop. Cops, squadron.
Mike Fotis as one cop, Kumail Nanjiani as Jerry, Christina Baldwin as Jerry's wife, me as the other cop. Say, John, I understand that there's a longer version of the Cop Squadron theme song that the band has been working up. I say I understand that there is because you play it at all the rehearsals.
It's our favorite thing to do, is that what you're
saying? It's your favorite thing to do.
And no one has ever heard it.
So I wonder if we should give the audience a special treat.
Cop Squadron. Cop Squadron. Squadron cops doing their jobs down at the shop. Cop Squadron.
Wits, I'm John Moe, here with singer-songwriter Valerie June and comedian Kumail Nanjiani. Kumail, you are an expert on video games. You're up on all the latest and greatest. But how good are you on not the latest and greatest, but the long ago and very, very bad? It's time for a round of high score or game over. I will tell you about a game. You tell me if it's a real game by saying high score, or a fake one by saying game over. You could say real or fake, but I thought this would be more festive. Let's see how you do. Crude Buster, released in the U.S. in 1991, a beat-em-up arcade game.
High score.
You know about Crude
I've
Buster.
I've played Crude Buster. Yeah, it's a great game.
Lee Trevino's Fighting Golf, NES arcade game from 1988.
Ooh, I'll say... Game over, man.
High score. It's a real game. This is big action. They get into this. This is like public radio sports.
I really care about getting it right, too. I've really gotten caught up in the moment here. The game can I take that one again, Lee Trevino?
Lee Trevino's
high score.
Goal. Ah, well... Twins, the movie. Based on the movie Twins, it's a 1-to-2-player scroll screen video game where players take Arnold Schwarzenegger or Danny DeVito on crime-fighting adventures. Arnold can pick up anything. DeVito is very fast.
Now I know it's lies. Any video game that lets you choose between those two can't be real. Game over.
You're correct. It is game over. Fester's Quest, an action shooter game where Uncle Fester from the Addams Family shoots frogs.
High score.
High score it is. Have you played Fester's Quest?
Great game. I hate frogs.
Perfect. Perfect.
Are they water-based? Are they land-based? Untrustable. Kill them all.
All right. Hattress. Hattress is a puzzle video game developed by the same people who made Tetris. It's just like Tetris, except instead of blocks falling, hats fall.
Okay, there's a lot of Tetris clones, but I think the fact that you said that it's made by the same company makes me think game over.
High score. Hattress is a real game. Somebody made the same guy, Alexei Pajitnov.
Did he really?
He made Hattress.
Well, what happened was he made it and it's in Russia, so he didn't own the rights to the game, so he made no money off of it. So this was him like, oh, I can make
people
money.
Love hats, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Operation Dare, the game. Created in the late 80s in part by the federal government, Operation Dare is a game about the drug prevention program of the same name. Players control characters named Drug Stoppers.
I'm trying to see. The answers aren't written on there. I feel like I would have heard of that game, so I'm going to go game over. Oh, it's real. High score. Here, I'll give you an edit point. High score.
Game over.
You. Who was it? Security, could you escort the liars? Out
right.
of my life.
So far, you've gotten 3 out of 6. This will be our final question. This will determine if you win or lose.
I feel like I've already lost, John.
Stool Sitter. A ColecoVision game where you are a morbidly obese man trying to sit on a series of smaller and smaller stools without breaking them.
I'm gonna say ColecoVision couldn't handle like graphics to distinguish between the sizes of people, so I'm gonna say game over, man.
It is game over.
Yes!
Kumail Nanjiani wins. Congratulations.
Thank you. Thank you.
That got intense. I feel like I've just played a video game.
Oh man, I'm really bummed out about that Dare thing. I had it right, and then these devils.
More with Kumail Nanjiani and Valerie June in just a moment. This is Wits. I'm John Moe. Did you know we can be pals on email? It's true. Just go to witsradio.org. You can sign up for our newsletter, get the latest about what we're doing and what our various Wits guests are up to. Or you can tell us what you're up to on Twitter. Just tag us. We're at Wits. This is Wits. I'm John Moe, here with singer-songwriter Valerie June and comedian Kumail Nanjiani.
All right, coffee's all ready. I'm going to go over these PowerPoint slides one more time before everyone shows. Ooh, are those cronuts?
I thought if I brought cronuts, our team's second quarter losses might go down a little easier. Anything to distract from these numbers.
Great strategy. What's that?
That's the conference room table?
No! There, in the middle of the table, that potato.
Oh, I didn't notice that, huh? That's weird. I'll just move it off.
No, don't touch it! You'll only make how this, what, how, what, what's a potato doing on the conference table?
I don't know. Someone just left it.
A potato is an ingredient. This is not a kitchen or a store. It's a conference room. Potato, how is anything what?
Jimothy, are you okay?
What does okay even mean anymore? When there can be a potato in a conference room.
Good morning, Kathy, Jimothy. Oh, good God!
It was here when we came in. Potato!
Don't panic! Let's form committees to analyze this. We are each a one-person committee. Okay, time for committees to report. My committee wonders if Kathy did this.
No! What possible reason would I have? Look, it's no biggie. I'll just move it to the kitchen.
No!
It can make it worse.
There might be a tiny witch inside of it who'll burst forth.
All right, let's get this meeting over with. Peterson, why don't you... Potato!
Yes! That's the whole thing! Good morning, Hayes. Sorry you've entered all this.
Do I still have an office? Am I a man? If I pour this coffee on my pants, will the coffee float? Okay, no, my pants are wet. That's good. But potato!
Okay. Okay, I know what this is, and I guess we all have to die sometime. Take my hand, Death Potato.
He's right. All is lost. But it's not Robert Redford all is losting in a boat. It's all is lost in this conference room.
I still say it was Kathy. As the office around us melts, the copier collapses into a black hole. As the universe sheds its last wisp of meaning, the stars will cry, Kathy.
She's the potato witch, I bet. The potato witch is an itty-bitty potato Kathy.
I'm not a potato witch or any witch. Potato what the hell? Witch.
What the hell? A potato the hell.
Hey, guys. Sorry I'm late, but... Oh, potato! Ah!
Oh, I didn't know she could run that fast.
Yeah, there she goes. See, in many ways, I think Megan's reaction right there is the most logical of all.
She's running through the parking lot. What? She's running right past her car. She's running into the woods.
She didn't want to stop at the car. That would give the potato a chance. She's gone to live in the forest where no potato will find her. She's a hero.
We must all take Megan's example and act. I will go to my office. I'm going to get a cup of coffee first, and then I'm going to go to my office, curl up under my desk, and await a starchy tuber death.
I will go to the roof. Strip naked and spend the rest of the day waiting for the universe to explain itself.
Okay, bye, you guys.
I'm leaving too, Kathy. Nothing means anything anymore.
Jimothy, wait.
What now?
I guess no one's going to worry about our quarterly numbers today.
It was you.
Slick, huh? Want a cronut?
Sure. Want a potato?
God, no!
Christina Baldwin as Kathy, Kumail Nanjiani as Jimothy, Mike Fotis as Peterson, Valerie June as Megan, me as Hayes. And now the Wits Lightning Round. Short questions, short answers. Valerie June, if you could change your last name to any other month, what month would you choose?
August.
Kumail, best book you ever read?
Oh, I like Midnight's Children by Salman Rushdie.
Valerie, most recent book you read?
Manuscripts of Acura by Paulo Coelho.
Valerie, dream musical collaborator?
Tracy Chapman.
Kumail, if you opened a restaurant, what would it serve?
Empanadas.
Kumail, what is the funniest movie of all time?
Groundhog Day.
Kumail, what do people not understand about Iowa?
I think they've got it all figured out.
Valerie, who is the person you most admire?
My dad and my mom. Do I have to choose one?
No, that's fine. We'll allow it.
They'll get jealous of each other.
Kumail, what do you most fear?
Oh, death.
Valerie, do you think your mom and dad could help Kumail overcome his fear of death?
Yes.
Kumail, what's the largest zoo animal you could beat in a fight if it came right down to it?
I bet you I could beat a llama.
Valerie, what should aspiring singers always remember?
Warm up before you sing.
Kumail, what's your favorite mispronunciation of your name that you've heard?
It's not my favorite. I'll tell you my least favorite. Camel.
Valerie, cilantro, yes or no?
Yes.
Yes.
Absolutely.
Kumail, kale, yes or no?
Yes.
Kumail, if you had to get rid of all movies, TVs, comics, games related to either zombies, vampires, or pirates, which would you get rid of?
I'd get rid of pirates.
Pirates. Valerie, how...
You know why?
Why?
I'm over them.
You're just going for it now, aren't you? You're steering right into the choppy waters.
Yeah, I mean, I didn't want to, you know, parrot back to you announcing.
Okay.
I wouldn't have a leg to stand on if I did that. Listen, I'm all at sea with this.
It just keeps going.
I'll patch it up later. Valerie, how hard is it to play the guitar?
Hard.
Kumail, how hard is it to play the guitar?
Very hard.
And that's the Wits Lightning Round. Here with more music, Valerie June.
Thank you. the working woman blues.
Valerie June with John Munson and the Witnesses. Want more wits in your life? Go to witsradio.org and find out how you can see a wits show in person. You can sign up for our newsletter, get the latest about what our various wits guests are up to, or tell us what you're up to on Twitter. Just tag us. We're at wits. Thanks to our guests this week, Valerie June and Kumail Nanjiani. Thanks also to broadcast engineer Corey Schreppel, our coordinating producer Hans Buto, our intern Sam Siegel, and Fitzgerald Theater staff Alan Freckman, Mike Wongan, Mike McQuiston, Aaron Cassio, and Noah Smith. Wits is written by me and Ben Acker, Wendy Molyneux and Jeff Drake, John Oswald, and Mike Fotis, who also acted in this week's show along with Christina Baldwin. We're joined by music director John Munson and The Witnesses, Steve Rome, Joe Savage, Richard Medick, and Janie Winterbauer. Our executive producer is Peter Clowney, which was created by Tony Boll, senior producer Larissa Anderson, and me. I'm John Moe. Bye now.